Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 25th, 2018. Top UN diplomats express dismay at South Sudan's leaders' failure to bring peace to their country.
We cannot stand by idly as innocent civilians are murdered and raped. We must change course. It's long past time the Security Council establish an arms embargo on South Sudan. Rather than continue to hold endless meetings on a crisis that only becomes worse each month.
And talks continue to obtain the release of two Kenyan pilots in custody.
SPLAIO negotiations with them have been taking place between the aircraft company and their insurers. I don't want to go into any details about that because negotiations are ongoing and I don't want to in any way jeopardize those.
We'll have details on these stories coming up shortly. SPLAIO rebels loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar are holding two Kenyan pilots in Akobo. The rebels say they will not allow the pilots to leave until a compensation is paid to the family of a civilian who was killed when their plane crash-landed in the area. UNMISS confirms the two pilots are being held and negotiations are underway to obtain their release. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel says the plane crash landed more than 2 weeks ago in Akobo East, an area being controlled by a Machar-led SPLAIO faction. Gabriel says when the plane crash landed, it killed an elderly man and at least 10 cows.
The owners of the Luak or the cattle camp or the cattle house are requesting compensation, and also the family of the deceased are requesting for compensation. So the situation we are in at the moment.
The Kenyan newspaper, The Standard, this week quoted Captain Godwin Wachira, the owner of the plane, as saying pilot Captain Frank Joroji and co-pilot Kennedy Shamala were flying a Kenyan-owned Cessna Caravan 5Y FDC plane hired by a non-governmental organization to ferry staff members to assess the humanitarian needs of Akobo. Wachira is quoted by The Standard as saying the two pilots are safe and according to the Bia State Governor, they will only be released after compensation is paid. SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwong confirms the plane was on a mission to Akobo and expected to return to Juba.
The plane was chartered by an NGO to take the member of the staff. Then it developed a mechanical problem or a technical problem, should I say. Then it crash-landed at the airstrip. So while it was crash-landing, it killed a female local who was within that vicinity. And the rebel-appointed governor of that area, he started demanding for $200,000 as a compensation.
Gabriel denies the rebels are demanding $200,000 in compensation for the Kenyan airplane company. He says negotiations between the two parties to gain the release of the two pilots are ongoing.
We the SLA would like, or the SLA would like the situation not to be politicized. Because right now we have other people who are politicizing this thing, saying that, okay, Governor Rambang of the SLA or BA State is requesting for compensation. No, the SLA is not requesting for compensation. What we are trying to do is just protect the civilians, let me say, this pilot from being hurt by the civilians. The local chief have been directed to solve the problem.
Gabriel says SPLAIO leaders directed local authorities and an SPLAIO representative in Nairobi to work with the aviation company to resolve the matter. UNMISS Chief David Sierra calls the incident as unfortunate and confirms that talks continue between the SPLAIO and the aviation company.
SPLAIO negotiations with them have been taking place between the aircraft company and their insurers. I don't want to go into any details about that because negotiations are ongoing and I don't want to in any way jeopardize those.
None of the 9 passengers on board the plane were killed in the crash landing. Akobo, about 200 miles north of the capital, Juba, has been the scene of repeated intercommunal clashes and attacks between government and rebel forces. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan signed a $200 million deal with the Chinese government today to build an air traffic management and control system in South Sudan. Sudan has been controlling the airspace of South Sudan since 2011. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
The framework agreement signed today between South Sudan's finance ministry and the Chinese government will be followed in a few weeks by a loan agreement. The loan will be provided to South Sudan by the Chinese government through the Export-Import or Exim Bank of China and is worth 1.573 billion Chinese yuan, which is the equivalent of $231 million. South Sudan Finance Minister Stephen Diodao says the agreement will give South Sudan control over its own airspace, which has been controlled by Khartoum.
This signing of the framework agreement on air traffic management system is one of the projects which will enable South Sudan to own and to control airspace traffic.
China's ambassador to South Sudan, He Jingdong, signed the agreement on behalf of his government.
This project will benefit the economic development of South Sudan, and it will strengthen the government and the people of South Sudan to have the sovereign control of their airspace over their head.
Several South Sudanese ministers and undersecretaries were on hand for today's signing ceremony in Juba. David Martin Hassan, undersecretary at South Sudan's Ministry of Transport, says South Sudan has not been able to control its own airspace because it lacks the technical capability to do so.
The air traffic management system, the upper airspace of the Republic of South Sudan, since after the independence has been controlled by the third country, which is the Republic of Sudan, for reasons which are purely technical and capability, that South Sudan, after the independence, was not equipped with up-to-the-standard equipment required to control its airspace.
The project will be implemented by the China Harbor Engineering Company and is expected to take 3 years to complete. South Sudan has relied on Khartoum to control its airspace since declaring its independence in 2011. Once South Sudan's air traffic management system is up and running, Hassan says, South Sudan's agreement with Sudan will come to an end.
To complete our independence, we must control our airspace by ourselves. Now, this agreement has given us a green light. In 3 years from now, South Sudan should be able to be at that level to control its airspace. We are going to have the air traffic management system, which is simply control of communication, navigation, and surveillance.
South Sudan's Transport Minister, Jean-Luc Jok, says the air traffic management system will involve setting up surveillance equipment to monitor international traffic in South Sudan's airspace.
So it will include having a set of radars throughout our country, different locations, and the command center will also be here at the headquarters at Juba Airport. This will involve a number of our institutions as stakeholders, beginning with the Minister of Defense, the National Security. All the security organs will have some role to play.
The loan will cover the procurement and installation of surveillance and communication equipment, building a command center at Juba International Airport, and the training of personnel and security organizations. It's not clear how or when the South Sudan government will pay back the loan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The UN Security Council held a briefing on South Sudan in New York yesterday. UN diplomats say they are disappointed at what one official termed as a failure by South Sudanese leaders to bring lasting peace to their country. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, told the U.N. Security Council yesterday that the council is failing South Sudan, not despite the leadership in South Sudan, but because of it.
We are morally obligated and obligated under the terms of the U.N. Charter to address threats to international peace and security in South Sudan. We cannot stand by idly as innocent civilians are murdered and raped. We must change course. It's long past time the Security Council establish an arms embargo on South Sudan. Rather than continue to hold endless meetings on a crisis that only becomes worse each month.
That disappointment was echoed by JMEC Chairman Festus Mahai, who delivered fiery remarks to the UN's New York headquarters amid multiple reports that both government and opposition forces have violated last month's ceasefire agreement.
We cannot stand by as South Sudanese leaders sign an agreement one day and authorize or allow its violation with impunity the next.
While pointing a finger at the warring parties, the former Botswana president also urged observers to hold the perpetrators accountable.
For the revitalization process to be successful and for it to have the value and meaning that we would all wish it to have, there must be a clear understanding among all South Sudanese leaders of the consequences of non-compliance and the determination of the world to ensure that the agreements they sign are complied with.
Ursula Mueller, Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator for OCHA, told the Security Council food insecurity is likely to worsen in the next lean season, and famine-like conditions could spread into new locations in the country, as the latest food insecurity analysis shows over 5 million people are severely food insecure in South Sudan.
This is an increase from the October to December period, and is already an increase when compared to this time of last year. Some 1.5 million people are in emergency-level food insecurity, just one step away from famine, and around 20,000 people are already in famine conditions.
Mueller blames the high levels of food insecurity on people being unable to harvest and plant due to pockets of insecurity. To make matters worse, Mueller says President Salva Kiir's order to allow free and unhindered access for humanitarian workers in November has been inconsistent, and access has been what she calls complex and unpredictable. But Mueller says there has been some positive developments.
Last week, for instance, the International Organization for Migration announced that for the past month it has been able to provide consistent primary health care in Greater Bagari, an area south of Wau, that was cut off from assistance by the SPLA for more than a year. And in western Equatoria, a humanitarian convoy delivering assistance to Congolese refugees in Yambio County was completed safely for the first time this month without force protection.
Truck drivers reported a total of 66 checkpoints controlled by state and different non-state actors. Some of them are charging a fee to pass, according to Mueller. Ayan Dengbior for VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's first vice president says he's here to stay. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can African countries develop to export more manufacturing goods rather than raw materials?
African countries should open many companies, industries, markets, new markets that will specialize in manufacturing. So as they manufacture, they will have to export more.
African countries should put up more industries and encourage people to go into agro-processing.
And also needs people to be trained on how to manufacture the things ready so that they can be transported.
I will have to say that we need to build our own machines. A product like cocoa, for example, if we had the machineries to manufacture chocolates, I'm sure we will not be exporting it outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, says the recent accusations made by the SPLM former detainees that he was violating the ceasefire deal was meant to destroy the image of the government and the good work he's doing in Jonglei. Guy says he will not step down if former first vice president Riek Machar returns to Juba. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
Guy says he will continue to work with president even if Riek Machar decides to return to South Sudan.
I don't think Riek Machar has a place in the transition government of national unity. How will Riek Machar come back? Because Riek Machar coming back, he will say that he wants to come with a huge army. He wants to have two parallel armies in Juba. He wants to have a parallel government in Juba.
During Guy's swearing in 2016, he said he would step aside if Machar returns to Juba.
I'm never by for this position. I'm only filling a vacant according to directive and dictation of my leadership. If situation dictates itself again that Riek Machar come back this position, I don't think it will be me to abandon to be an obstacle if that can bring peace to my country.
Critics have suggested both President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar should retire from politics, arguing that is the only way to restore lasting peace in the country. Guy doesn't see it that way.
Liberators, they don't relinquish power very soon. And there are some of them like Mugabe now who has 90-something years. Somebody like Salva Kiir, I don't forget for Salva Kiir leaving power. Because he's the equilibrium of the SPLM as a party. He's the equilibrium of the nation.
Vice President Guy called a news conference in Juba yesterday to talk about his recent tour of Jonglei, Bia, Buma, Akobo and Fangagi states. Guy says his trip was aimed at convincing communities in the region to end child abduction and cattle wrestling. He vows the government will do everything in its power to end such violence in the future.
This year we are going to stop this bias of child abduction and cattle wrestling. Let us use maximum power, maximum force of the government to stop this criminal from not allowing our citizens to be peaceful. Do you agree with me? The government has the capacity. I think you challenge the government that you, the government, you have the capacity. Why are you are not stopping this? Actually, we may even use the gunship, by the way, even the planes. We can bomb them. Then we are going to do this. Whether it needs tanks, we use tanks. If it needs human being, resources, the police, the army, we use that. Because those criminals, they are armed to the teeth. A lack of implementation of the resolution of the government is going to be the history of the past.
Guy says he witnessed firsthand the dire humanitarian situation South Sudanese are facing in the villages during his recent tour of five states.
The second complaint is lack of water. Lack of water for both human and animals. And this lack of water is more acute in low areas, in UI areas, ward areas. The whole of Bia state have no water. Also, maybe 50% of Fangagi state also have no water, like Ayut. And you know those, and also the counties of the three dukes, Warnyol also, they have a lot of problem for lack of water for animals and human. The other problem is lack of educational and health services.
Guy says he saw human beings and cattle sharing the few available water points, which he worries may allow the return of the eradicated Guinea worm. He says, despite South Sudan's economic crisis, the government will provide humanitarian assistance to the vulnerable, but also called on donors to give money.
This will be according to the capacity of the government, what it can fund this year. But we are going to continue appealing very much to our partners. If they love South Sudan, if they want peace in this country, we must provide peace dividends.
SPLAIO accused Taban of violating the ceasefire agreement during his trip to Jonglei State 2 weeks ago. The spokesman of the former detainees, Kosti Manibe, told South Sudan in Focus, Guy's movement with huge number of troops in Jonglei is a clear violation of the cessation of hostilities signed by various armed and unarmed parties in Addis last month. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar, reporting from Juba.
A chief from Kajukeji County says some South Sudanese refugees in Uganda are responding positively to calls from community leaders to return home. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Moyo District in northern Uganda.
Kajukeji County's chief, Lioness Kenye Abdallah, says hundreds of former refugees are now going back to clear bushes around their houses in preparation for returning home. He says while some are abandoning their camps and returning to Kajukeji on foot, others are taking steps to make sure their homes are not consumed by raging wildfires.
When I was going on the way 3 days ago, a lot of the people on the way going, I was meeting them footing, not going with a vehicle, but they were footing.
A group of political and traditional leaders from the county held a meeting in a government-controlled part of Kajukeji in November and agreed to mobilize refugees to return home, saying security conditions have improved considerably. Scopas Taban Lokabang, Kajukeji Member of Parliament in the Transitional National Assembly, visited the town last week and was disturbed by what he saw.
What I saw is mind-boggling. The count structures are already in ruins. Houses have been broken into. Churches have also been broken into. Schools have been broken into. Everything.
Lokabang is appealing to South Sudan's leaders to end the 4-year conflict in the country so refugees can finally return home to rebuild their lives. He is also urging refugees to check security conditions in their villages first before vacating the settlements. Wani Milton, who fled Kajukeji nearly a year ago and now resides at the Palorinya camp in Moyo District, says he has no plans to return until peace is fully restored in South Sudan.
The problem is there is no peace because the rebels are there, the government is there. Once you are there, and then, of course, you will be on crossfire always, you see. So, to me, myself, security-wise, I don't endanger my life for that.
Peter Thongbor Aluong, the chief of immigration for Kajukeji, says refugees such as Milton have nothing to fear because the South Sudan Army working in the area has confirmed conditions are safe.
The army commander have given assurance that he will give full protection to any civilians who will come back and to clear their houses, because the houses are in the bush and they will be burning during this dry season.
UNHCR spokesperson Joyce Mbithi says her agency is aware of people returning to South Sudan from Uganda, but cautions refugees against rushing back.
Yes, the phenomena of people going back and forth is there. The reasons vary. I wouldn't think that at the time, at the moment, the conditions in South Sudan are any better for them to go back to than when they fled.
Tens of thousands of people fled from villages in Kajukeji early last year after fighting intensified between government forces and troops loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar in the area. The majority settled in camps in Moyo and other districts in Uganda's West Nile region. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Moyo.
From Uganda, we move to Central African Republic, where the UN Refugee Agency reports escalating violence in the Central African Republic has displaced women and children inside and outside the country to record-high levels. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The fiercest fighting and greatest displacement is taking place in Central African Republic's northwest region. The UN peacekeeping mission in that country reports clashes between two armed groups have forced some 65,000 people, mainly women and children, to flee to the city of Pau over the last 3 weeks. The charity, Doctors Without Borders, says it has treated more than a dozen victims of the fighting in Pau. One woman, it says, told them the armed men are known to kill adult men they encounter. As for overall displacement numbers, data at the end of last year show nearly 690,000 people now are internally displaced, 60% more than just a year ago. In addition, it finds the number of CAR refugees in neighboring countries is approaching 550,000, 12% higher than in 2016. UN refugee spokesman Adrian Edwards says these are unprecedented numbers, the highest seen since war in CAR broke out nearly 4 years ago.
There is real alarm at the displacement situation, not just in CAR, but in this entire region of Africa, at the heart of Africa, in DRC, which you heard about earlier, in South Sudan, and in CAR. You now have approximately 11 million people forcibly displaced. That's a number equivalent to the entire Syria situation.
Edward says almost one half of CAR's 4.6 million people will face severe food shortages this year and be in need of humanitarian assistance. Providing this aid, he says, will be extremely difficult given the low level of funding for UN aid operations. He calls CAR one of the world's most forgotten displacement crises. He adds, CAR is measurably the most invisible refugee situation in the world. Last year, he notes, the UNHCR received only 12% of the $209 million needed for CAR refugee aid, barely more than $1 for every $10 required. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That story by Lisa Schlein brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Africa Unite by Bob Marley. We have been listening to a remix of Bob Marley's song Africa Unite. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. I would like to hear what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Africa, yeah.